Ask the operator.
Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time.
Thank you very much. Okay, welcome to everyone. And in case you were not aware of it, Aubrey is unable to make the call today, so I am chairing the meeting. We'll do a roll call in just a second. But before we do that, Denise, I think this is the first time that Ken's been on a council call. Is that correct?
Yes, I think it is. You're right.
Would you like to introduce him to the
council list? Ken Bauer is a consultant who is working with us on the GNSO, variety of GNSO improvement projects. And he comes with a long and distinguished career in generally related to high tech, with an emphasis in project and program management. And he is based on the East Coast.
Yes, in fact, I guess he's not too far from where I am today. So, welcome, Ken.
Thank you very much.
Why don't we go ahead and do the roll call, realizing that we still need a couple more, I think, for a quorum. But go ahead, Glenn.
Certainly. Philip Shepherd will join later for the vote. Mike Rodenbach?
Yes.
Zahi Jamil?
Yes.
Uta Decker? Christina Rosette?
Yes.
Cyril Chua? Tony Holmes and Tony Harris have apologized. They will not be able to be on the call. Greg Ruth?
Here.
Robin Gross?
Present.
Norbert Klein?
I just joined now.
Thank you, Norbert. Carlos Souza? Adrian Kindres?
Present.
Tim Ruiz?
Present.
Tom Keller, I believe, is still on vacation. Jordi Iparaguirre. Chuck Gomes.
Present.
Edmund Chan. Yon Bing is ill. Avery is absent. Olga Cavelli.
Present.
Alan Greenberg.
Present.
Rita Roden sent her excuses. She can't be on the call. And then from staff, we have Kurt Pritz,
yes.
Denise Michel, Rob Hogarth, Olaf Nordling, Marika Koenigs, Liz Gaster, Craig Schwartz, and
yes.
Ken Bauer. Have I missed anybody?
So am I correct, Glenn, that we're one short of a quorum?
We've got 12 votes, so we are short of a quorum.
And you included Norbert on that, right? Okay.
13 votes, yes, we want to short of a quorum, and Norbert is included.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's talk about, first of all, item one on the agenda is updating statement of interest. Does anyone have an update? Okay, let's talk about the agenda then. And excuse me. Hopefully, my voice will hold out for this call. Forgive my little cough. I'm trying to keep things in my mouth to minimize it. On the agenda, Tim Ruiz has suggested. I think Tim, if I understand it correctly, is suggesting moving the two. Voting item five and item 10. Somebody may need to mute their phone. Thank you. So I think, Tim, if I understand correctly, you wanted to move item 5 and item 10 to before item 4. Other than the fact that it sounds like one or two people plan to join the call later. I don't have any problem. problem with that, but let me open it up for discussion. Both of those are voting items. And did Philip indicate what time he was going to join the call, Glenn?
He wouldn't know before the vote, and I think he has asked members of the constituency to let him know when the vote will take place.
Yeah, I think I prefer not to move that item just because Philip is again, and he's chairing another call at the moment.
Okay. Any other comments on that?
Yeah, this is Tim. Yeah, that's okay. I just going forward, maybe it's something we can give some thought to, though, if we put items that we intend to vote on towards the end. I just get concerned because, you know, it seems to calls kind of stretch out sometimes. We lose counselors at the end, so maybe, you know, somewhere in the middle or some a little bit further up so we can get the best participation possible. But I realize today, since the agenda's been out there, others might have already made plans and may not be practical to move it.
It's a good consideration, though, for the future, Tim. Thanks. Okay, so we'll leave it as is right now. If we come to item 5 too quickly where there's a vote, we may have to delay that for those who are joining a little bit later, but we'll deal with that when we get there. We don't have the minutes to approve, so we'll go right on to item 4. And we have, first of all, an ICAM board update. Denise?
Yes. The next board meeting will be on September 30th, and the proposed agenda been approved by the executive committee has been posted on the ICANN website on the board page. I'll just quickly run through it. I'm happy to answer any questions about this or the previous board meeting that was held at the end of August. The substantive items on the September 30th agenda include approving an ICANN board of directors code of conduct, considering the de-accredited registrar transition procedure, approving a contract for a multiple language algorithm consultant. This is relating to the new GTLD implementation process. Reviewing the .coop and .mobi contractual amendments received through the RCEP process. GNSO Council restructuring. The President Strategy Committee report and the BGC's recommendation for the RSAC terms of reference and RFP. This is for the independent evaluator work. Also, the BGC's recommendation of the ESAC review terms of reference and RFP. Approval of the Finance Committee's IT equipment purchase. A status report on the independent reviews overall. A Finance Committee report, BGC report. And an update on the annual audit. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Okay, going on to the FastLux PDP working group. Mike?
Yes. Let's see, where to begin. The group is definitely moving forward, I think. Can't remember what the update was on the last call, but at this point, if this is news, then I need to tell you. The group is not likely to have its final report done in advance of Cairo. Well, it's not going to have its final report done, but we are shooting for an interim report, essentially, that takes the first stab at answering all of the questions that were posed to the group, and that would then be circulated around for constituency comments around the time of the Cairo meeting.
And Mike, a question in that regard. Is it reasonable to expect that the report may be out fairly with minimal time before the Cairo meeting, or do you think there will be some advanced distribution of it?
Well, surely my goal for the group, our goal is to have it within, you know, ideally 10 days before the meeting. So we're working towards that aim.
But even if that doesn't happen, am I correct that there's still a plan to have a session on the Fast Flux Working Group in Cairo, probably on Sunday if it can be fit in on Sunday, and that hasn't been finalized yet. But and then if it is late, there could be an overview provided at that session. Is that reasonable expectation?
Yes, of course. And then we'll talk about this on the working group call tomorrow, but I'm going to try to get the working group to meet in Cairo as well. I think it would be useful to meet face-to-face and go through the interim report together.
Now, is the group thinking, and you can talk to the other Mike, the chair, in that regard, but is it reasonable to expect that working group meeting would be held on the weekend or during the week?
Probably during the week, because many of the people in the working group would not be getting there typically on the weekend.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Anything else? Any questions? Okay, the inter-registrar transfer policy. Mike, you're also our liaison on that.
Right. So that group is moving along pretty well. We are working on getting constituency statements now. Back to notes myself. I need to work on the DC statement on that. Is that all of the constituencies should be working on constituency input right now per a template that was produced by the working group. I believe those are due in 9 or 10 days from now. And we are working certainly not on a schedule to be complete in time for Cairo, but we will certainly be able to have an update at that point.
And one of the things, there's also a possibility of an open working group meeting for that PDP, the working group on in Cairo on the weekend. I note that Sunday is definitely the better day for the group. An awful lot of things are falling into Sunday. It looks like a question, and I don't need an answer right now, but it'd be helpful to know if it can't be squeezed into Sunday, does the working group still want to have, would they want to have a meeting on Saturday, or is that kind of futile because of the number of working group members that would be there?
My sense is that it would probably be futile to have it on the weekend.
Even on Sunday, because that is what was previously discussed.
For the working group?
An open working group meeting like we often do on the weekend meetings. In other words,
right, I understand what you're saying. I'm not sure what the group would think about that. We'd have to ask them on the next call. My impression was that we were going to try to have the working group meetings during the week, but I'm not even sure that this working group will want or need to meet specifically during Cairo, but we'll have to address that on our next call on Tuesday.
Yeah, and then just feed that back to Aubrey and I and Glenn, and because we're getting up to the point where we need to start zeroing in on the specifics of the weekend meetings.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. Okay, Marika, would you just make sure we get that on our agenda for our working group call on Tuesday?
Yeah, I'll do so.
Okay. Anything else on that, Mike?
No, unless anyone has questions.
Okay. Any questions? All right. New GTLDs. And Craig, are you doing that one?
I believe Kurt's going to do that one.
Oh, Kurt's doing it. Okay, Kurt.
I think.
Fire away.
Oh, good morning. I'll keep this very brief. ICANN is planning to publish an initial draft version of the RFP for new GTLDs. We call it the Applicant Guidebook. Prior to Cairo, we'll publish it in as far in advance as we can so people have time to read it. It's clearly, if you look at the process, it's clearly a document for public comment. So the RFP will lay out how you apply for a new GTLD, the evaluation process, you know, the business and technical evaluation of the applicant and the string, how the process will work if there's an objection to the string on one of four grounds that are enumerated in the policy recommendations, how we deal with string contention in case there's collision between strings that are identical or so confusingly similar that they would result in user confusion, and then finally the delegation process. So what I'd like to take advantage of here is to clearly lay out that we think this is a for common public document. There's been a lot of consultation. I think it's been very successful between staff and supporting organizations and advisory committees in the community as we, you know, as the GNSO first developed the policy and then that effort transitioned into an effort for designing the implementation. But now we're at the stage where we have a document to mark up. So we'll be able to, talk about specific paragraphs or how things are done. So I want to enlist the council's help in getting the message that this isn't a document plopped over the wall as the final version of what's going to happen, but rather it's the next step in the collaboration for the launch of new TLDs. So a couple more points to be made are that. There'll be a set of a few papers released just in advance or a coincident with it that describes some of the process in more detail, or perhaps some of the reasoning behind how we got to or how we were constrained to get to a certain process. So, you know, for example, the comparative evaluation process and other aspects of string contention are described more fully in a paper. One area where we'll have considerable discussion, I think, is geographical place names. Since the board approved the policy recommendations, staff has had consultations with the GAC. We had a conference call and a few meetings with Giannis to try to fashion how to address the GAC principles on new GTLDs, which state for in one place that country and place names should not be delegated without the approval of the relevant government. And so while that doesn't call for a reserve names list, it does call for a process that administrative process that is required in order to release those names. So in our consultations with the GAC, quite a number of protections for geographical names for governments were discussed. Steph pointed out that all that could be carried out. In some cases, it's just too darn difficult to implement. There's too many gray areas. But still, we're left with areas where.
Hold on a second, Kurt. I don't know if somebody. There we go. That's better. Go ahead.
Yeah. So thanks. So you'll see the results of this in a paper and in the RFP. And again, I can discuss it in more detail here. But what I really want to point out is that's up here for discussion. I know that to a certain extent, the results for the formal GAC advice. Differ in certain aspects than the results of the publication of the reserve names working group that was chaired by Chuck, and so I think this would just this like I said this is an RFP for comments, so we want to use our various fora as an opportunity for discussing this. I want to give you a heads up that was a particular aspect of the RFP and the setup. Perhaps we can take advantage of Cairo and have either some cross ACSO talks or use the meeting as a forum to discuss these issues in the best way we can satisfy the requirements of governments and the requirements as set out by the policy recommendations and the associated working group reports.
Thanks, Kurt. I have a couple preliminary questions and a comment or two, and then I'll open up a queue on this one. First of all, now, will this guideline booklet be actually include the RFP, or is it something in addition to the RFP?
Yeah, they're synonymous.
Oh, okay. They are synonymous. Okay, very good. And now we have a we have tentatively scheduled time on Saturday to talk about new GTLDs, and so that could be a GNSO discussion on Saturday. We have a joint meeting with the GAC Sunday afternoon, I believe, and we could also discuss especially this one issue with regard to geographic place names in that session with them. So that's a couple opportunities. My other question then is it anticipated that there would be a general workshop on new GTLDs during the week as well?
There's going to be a workshop entitled Understanding the RFP, and there's going to be a few sessions in a few different languages that are more basic about, you know, the new GTLD program. And the discussions in the GNSO meeting, if it's scheduled for Saturday, is really more fine points about how we're doing string contention and how comparative evaluation is going to work and some of the nuance work.
So there'll probably be more detail on our Saturday workshop than on the things that happen during the week.
Yes, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for addressing the sophistication of the audience.
Okay. Let me open up a queue on this topic. Who would like to ask a question or make a comment?
This is Tim. I'd like to make a queue.
Tim, did I hear somebody else? Mike, okay. Anyone else? Okay, Tim, go ahead.
Kurt, I was just curious about the Cray International report and the status of that is.
We've been working with CRA, very actively reviewing portions of the report. So the work to date has really been, the report without a conclusion. So the report necessarily went through several iterations because they get, aspects of the marketplace wrong that might lead to wrong conclusions or needed additional material in order to understand the market or needed to go back into history to understand.
But I'm Mehrbani. Hold, DJ.
Hold on a second.
Please, hold on.
I'm not sure what...
But I'm Mehrbani.
Operator, can you assist us with that interruption? Not sure what's happening there. Go ahead, Kurt.
Okay, I have a button here I push every time I get a hard question.
Is it replicatable? Can I get one?
So at the end, we expect that. So we've asked, we think that, we think all that work's essentially complete, and we've asked CRA to write their conclusions, and we should receive that momentarily, and expect that the report can go out, at worst a couple weeks before Cairo.
So it may go out the same time as this other document.
Yeah.
And just a follow up question to Tim's then. So now I assume that RFP guideline book will include a base contract, and I would think that one of the terms in the base contract would be directly related to conclusions from that study. Is that correct?
Yeah, it should, or, depending on the results of the study and depending if, the next step was going to be a community discussion, but if the report points to a certain result, we'd probably include that result in the results of that result in the base contract and bracket it somehow.
Okay. All right. Tim, is that okay on the answer there?
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Mike?
Okay. So just clarify. So we're going to have the RFP. It's expected to be dropped on everybody a couple of weeks before Cairo. Is that right?
Yeah. That's what we're going for.
All right. Cool. And then you mentioned that the workshops would be in multiple different languages on this topic. Has there been thought about whether the application will be allowed in languages other than English?
Yeah, the RFP and the applicant or the applicant guidebook will be published in the six UN languages, but the applications themselves will
other questions or comments?
It's Dr. Sidrin.
Okay, go ahead.
With respect to the draft in capitals, RFP that's coming up, when you said before Cairo, will the technical criteria be included in that, do you expect?
Will the what?
The technical criteria?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, it looks like Jordy has joined us. Is that correct?
Yes, hello, I'm here.
Thank you, Jordy. So I guess we are up to a quorum now, unless somebody's dropped off, and it looks like Norbert may have dropped off. Norbert, are you on? So when we get to a vote, we'll have to check quorum again, I think, because we're borderline.
Chuck, I got a couple other small questions.
Go ahead.
Kurt, has there been any slippage in the overall timeline for the applications? Are they still expected to be taken in end of Q1, beginning Q2 next year?
Maybe. I certainly would say during Q2 sometime.
Keep in mind, Mike, that we have the minimum 4-month window once the process is officially launched. When that 4-month period ends is when the applications period is supposed to open.
Thinking this through, I think there's going to be quite some amendment to the RFP, quite a bit based on the round of community discussion. We've discussed various aspects of this implementation in the past and had really good discussions. But now that we're looking at a document on paper, I would think there'd be significant redlining, and because now people with expertise in their areas can apply that expertise not to an ephemeral discussion around the table, but applied to a specific document. And I think the document can be significantly improved by that consultation, which would result in another version of the draft before we get to that. There'll probably be two versions of a draft RFP. I think the comment and the redrafting of that version can happen very quickly, and then we would get to a final RFP. And we can discuss going forward how the 4-month communication plan fits into all of that, but certainly that's a very important part of the introduction, I think.
Okay, and then just one other question. When the draft RFP comes, are you expecting to also announce the application fee?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Any other questions or comments?
Chuck, this is Christina.
Christina, go ahead.
Kurt, I apologize. I dropped off the call for a few minutes while I was talking. Do you anticipate that these documents will also identify the entities that have been retained for the 4 areas of objections in terms of dispute resolution providers?
I think so. That's fairly well down the path. So if not, then immediately thereafter. So that, as you might expect, even though there's been a lot of work going on for months, there is a lot of work going on right now. And so there are, going to Mike's question, there's a cost model for, what the applications will cost to process, how those costs are burdened, and importantly, the risks associated with that, a risk assessment, and that's all being rolled up into what the fee would be. Negotiations with the dispute resolution providers are very far advanced, and looking at copies of agreements. So that's very far advanced, and it's certainly hopeful that all that gets tied up in time for release of the RFP. We think it's really important to release the RFP before Cairo for discussion. So if there are holes, they'll be filled in later. But both in the case of Mike's question and your question, the work's very far advanced, and it's planned to be part of the RFP. If it's not, it'd be very shortly after.
Okay, I have a follow up. Do you anticipate that the proposed rules and procedures that the dispute resolution providers intend to use, will those be open for public comment, or will they be presented kind of a here's the package?
Oh, I think It's hard to say that anything wouldn't be posted for public comment. I'm trying to really really understand what the question is. In certain cases, the rules, the procedural rules, have really been discussed with the dispute resolution provider, and they're essentially their rules. I don't think they would change much there. They're their standard operating rules.
Oh, okay, all right.
And but in the case of standards, again, in certain cases, those have been discussed with the dispute resolution provider, and they feel comfortable with a certain amount of discretion, or not allowing discretion. But certainly, public discussion can occur, and improvements can be made.
All right, thank you.
So it sounds like you're talking about two things there. One of them is their procedural rules, but secondly, and I think probably this was maybe what Christine was getting to, are the objective criteria that they would be expected to evaluate in the dispute processes. That part would be open for public comment, correct?
Right, that part is certainly more susceptible to change.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thank you.
Good. Anyone else? Well, thanks, Kurt, for a very useful update there. We're getting closer.
Yeah.
So that should be one of the key topics in Cairo. Let's go on to Fast Track. And Denise, do you have an update there?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. The staff continues to work on the numerous implementation issues that arose out of the IDMC Fast Track report that was accepted by the board in Paris. Staff from several departments actually are meeting today, and Mia Del Rey will be addressing a number of implementation issues that we're working on. These include tracking the IETF work on protocol revision, issuing a request for information to governments and CCTLDs to get a sense of which countries are interested and ready to advance with their IDN fast track applications, developing the various elements of an IDN fast track application process. Work also includes IANA processing and string contention, string validation fees. Those are sort of the highlights. We will have draft material for the community to review and discuss in Cairo, and we're also planning updates and I believe a workshop on this as well. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
A couple follow-up questions there, Denise. Number one, is it still anticipated that new IDN GTLDs would be introduced the same time as the ID and CCTLDs in the fast track? And secondly, is it a plan to have a workshop in Cairo where that would be open and discussed the current status being discussed openly there?
Yes, our goal still is to have the IDMC fast track coincide with the new GTLD application process, and we will definitely have open public discussions of the work to date on fast track. Kurt, have we settled on are you aware on a workshop or a venue for Cairo?
I know there's a fast track workshop, so.
Yeah. So I'll,
there's going to be a joint, there's the meeting that's the joint meeting of the SOs, right, with the GAC.
Right, on Monday. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so they're going to devote an hour to it, and then there's a separate workshop on IDN Fast Track.
Right, so if it's not on the Cairo schedule already, I'll email it to the list so you know which day.
Thank you. Anybody like to get in the queue on this? Okay, Tim, go ahead.
Sorry, I was trying to chew fast in the middle of breakfast. one thing I didn't hear mentioned was, and maybe it's part of the RSI or something, I don't know, but it's any further discussion about what type of I hate to say agreement, but I just wanted, where it comes to mind right now, might be proposed or considered for the fast track IDN?
Yes, discussion certainly continues on what form of agreement might be appropriate for that. Kurt, did you want to provide some of
details? So discussions have centered around calling it a document of responsibilities, though it's not called a contract, but certainly, informing new entities such as these IDNs, there's the opportunity to ensure that certain aspects of ICANN's mission are fulfilled. So, any agreement would have stability and security aspects associated with it. So, request that or require that the parties comply with consensus policy associated with stability and security aspects. And also have some enforcement mechanisms in those agreements to help encourage the parties to meet those consensus policy requirements, and also recognize that there's considerable expenses being generated in the development of IDNs and in this program in particular, and for the maintenance of them, and that those
thank you.
Those expenses get recouped in some way. So there's several aspects to an agreement that that ICANN is crafting now for discussion.
Okay, thank you. And so will that be a part of the? Will there be an opportunity for community input on that?
Yeah, there certainly will be. And we're counting on your input there, Tim.
All right, thanks.
Anyone else? Thanks to both Denise and Kurt for the good feedback there. AGP consensus policy implementation. Craig, is that you? Or is that Kurt again?
Not me.
Not you, huh?
Is that you, Chuck?
Yeah, it's the staff that's working on implementation there. Any update there? Anyone on staff?
Yeah.
Craig? I think Craig was going to give...
Right. And if Craig is not available, I think Rob has been working with the cross-department group that's implementing that.
Can you not hear me right now?
Oh, now I can.
Now we can.
Sorry, I had to go off mute. ICANN staff will be... providing an update in Cairo, both to the council and in a public forum, on both progress on the AGP limits policy, as well as a review of what's happened as a result of the AGP budget provision, based on the transactional registry report information from July. As I think everybody knows, the information that registries submit every month is confidential or treated as confidential for 3 months following the submission of the information. So November will be the opportunity for a discussion or a look at the transactional information supplied for July. On the AGP limits policy, I think I mentioned on the last call that staff reached out to GTLD registries and registrars to solicit specific input on some of the terminology in the approved GNSO recommendation, and the feedback that we've gotten from registries and registrars will be incorporated to the draft policy and implementation notes that staff committed to posting prior to the Cairo meeting. So that's the update on the budget provision and the policy implementation, and I'm certainly welcome to take questions if folks have them.
Anyone want on the queue? Okay, thanks, Craig. And last of all, under this item 4.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, I was on mute.
Oh, okay.
I have a question. It's actually
Go ahead,
more of
Christine.
A request. Craig and Denise, and I don't know to whom else I should address this, I get a lot of inquiries from folks within the trademark community about the status of this, and it would frankly be extraordinarily helpful to me if this information were included in kind of the policy update section that's on the homepage or in the monthly newsletter.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Christina. The last item then there is the RIA amendments. And, Kurt, I think you're going to talk about that. Is that right?
Yeah, just briefly. Thank you, Josh. As you know, we have a set of, it's about 16 amendments that have been worked through a process. That process was, where forums were first established to solicit community input as to how the RIA might be amended. And there was significant input there. And that input was synthesized into two groups, those groups that would feed into potential contract modifications, and then other input that merited discussion but couldn't really be part of this. They either weren't well suited for a two-party agreement between ICANN and a registrar, or they were already part of some other policy discussion that was going on, or constituted a broader policy issue, so it just couldn't be implemented into a contract change. And so some of the suggestions were really marketplace issues, such as requiring registrars to provide certain service levels, where if you want to be a full service registrar, you're fully free to do that, as opposed to some registrar that might be a lower cost registrar but provide less services. So then those ideas and thoughts were taken and then molded into a set of potential amendments that were then discussed with registrars who came with a couple of their own. But the wording in those preliminary amendments was then refined to get to where we are today. So as you all know, we have this set of 15 or 16 amendments, and we're sitting here executing a process in order to get them incorporated into the RAA, which requires some sort of consensus policy to do that. So we've been thinking about different ways of going about it. There's been some criticism of the amendments in the comment forums, and the criticism really goes to that the amendments don't go far enough. Either specific amendments don't go far enough, or the amendments as a group don't address enough issues. So it seems like there's a few ways we can go from here. We can either work together. The council necessarily, I think, has to, if you read the agreement, the council necessarily has to be part of the approval mechanism for this set of amendments. So, the option seemed to be to approve this set of amendments and then pat ourselves all on the back, or approve this set of amendments and then kick off another round of discussion similar to the last one in order to make in order to keep momentum going and make continual improvement. Or the third would be to decide not to go ahead with a set of amendments and, again, start a discussion and re-energize the process to enhance these amendments and perhaps create new ones. It's the staff's position that these amendments provide some significant improvements in the way the relationship between ICANN and registrars and ICANN and the registrants will work, that there's a group of new enforcement tools here regarding, you know, sanctions, the ability to audit, fees, and, you know, an arbitration stay that significantly improved the enforcement capability of the agreement. There's some protections from registrants. There's an increased focus on relationships with resellers. It promotes a more stable and competitive marketplace. We think we work to understand better how accreditation by purchase works and put some controls in there. We require operator skills training and testing for registrars, and so on. And then we clean up part of the agreements too. So it's clearly staff's position that we should work to, you know, improve this set of amendments and get them into the RAA as fast as possible. And staff would, you know, support ongoing discussions regarding how additional improvements would be made into the RAA. We think the mechanism for approving this set of amendments, requires a GNSO approval. It probably also, you know, includes some approval by the board. We've staff in building these scenarios have gone back and forth. You know, should we ask the board to vote and ask the GNSO to consider the amendments? Should we ask the GNSO to vote and approve these set of amendments for final approval by the board? There, I think there's a couple ways to skin that cat. But what I'd like to do is have a discussion later on to get. My goal would be to get, and I think the rest of ICANN staff goal would be to get consensus around, you know, we want to improve these sets of amendments to get some improvements in place right away, and then, how we can make additional improvements and what discussions can take place later should also be part of that discussion.
Kurt, first I've heard of a need for GNSO approval. Where did that come from?
Well,
I understand the board approval.
Yeah, so I think that it's written in the I think it's right in the RAA. I was looking at text today, so one of the ways it has to be done by consensus policy, and the approval is signified by a 2/3 vote. I'll try and find it.
Yeah, but there was no consensus policy developed on this particular issue. Anyway, if you could email the reference there in the RRA to the council, that would be excellent.
Right. Yeah, I surely will. And the definition of what that is in the RAA predates the definition, the current formulation of consensus policy. So what that means in the agreement is different from our
okay.
Consensus policy. That's why it's a different.
Yeah, it'd be helpful to see what that is if you could send it to the council list.
Sure.
Anybody like in the queue here?
Mike Rosenbaum.
Oh, this is Tim.
Okay, Mike and Tim.
And
anybody
Christina,
else?
Please.
Was that Christina?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Kurt, you mentioned that one of the three high-level options here was to essentially move forward with the amendments that have been agreed between staff and registrars so far, and then kind of put any other issues into a subsequent path. But that's accurate characterization, yes?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. But, you know, the RAA, of course, trickles down into registration agreements and really is not something that can be amended, you know, very frequently, I would think, from a registrar's perspective especially. So does that really make sense? Doesn't it make sense to just get all the amendments that we can agree to in one batch and then go and distribute that out to the world?
I think so. This work's taken nearly 2 years, and for me, I want to make some improvements now. So my impression is that to reopen discussion on these would really push out the timeline, and I think that approving this set and getting some improvements right away should not in any way delay the next set of discussions. It'd be good to have you know, more routinized process for this rather than making this whole thing, you know, painful. I think I also think that if we make a set of amendment changes and when we finally get them implemented, we say, wow, we did it, and then all of a sudden the next time it's not so difficult, you know, to follow the same process we did this time. And we get more brave about just, you know, biting off smaller pieces and making specific changes to address changes in the marketplace.
Well, after the last round of public comments, obviously there's quite a bit of opposition to some of the amendments. Has there been another round of negotiations between staff and the registrars? Will there be another draft, essentially, of the proposed RAA put out?
You know, I don't think so. I think those negotiations were carried as far as they could. I mean, there was a lot of time spent.
But basically accept these as they are now and then decide how we're going to address future issues, or keep these on the table while we discuss those other issues.
Yeah, I think so. I think if we amend these, I think it's more of a, you know, and if you're going to amend these, I think it's more of a start over, because then it's really, you know, requires a full understanding of, if you're going to change something, it requires a full understanding of why it's there. So it requires an issues paper, I think. I mean, I'm not the governance person here, but it's more of a start over mode. I think most of the public comment went to, you know, these didn't go far enough. You know, you need some additional ones. And so to that extent, I think the path to enhance these is to get these in place and then discuss how they can be amended.
Okay, I want to pick up the speed a little bit. We're way behind in our agenda. At the same time, I recognize all of these update issues are really of critical concern to everybody, so I do want the discussion to occur.
Chuck, it's Alan. Could you put me in the queue?
Yeah. Tim.
I'll drop out of the queue for now.
Okay. Christina?
Yeah, Kurt, I just want to make sure that I'm clear that it's staff view that as of among the three kind of paths that you laid out, that staff is supporting the second one, namely to approve the existing set of amendments and then focus on those proposals or suggestions that didn't translate into amendments. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really for the, you know, for the supporting organization to do the second part of that, but we would certainly support it.
Okay. I guess what I'm having a hard time getting my mind around is, as I'm sure you are probably aware, there is significant frustration within both the user community and particularly within the IP constituency about the amount of time and energy that has been devoted on trying to very carefully draft very specific and clear language. And at this point, as far as we can tell, those hundreds of hours have essentially gone down into Alice's rabbit hole. And I'm having a really hard time understanding why you think or why you think there may be further incentive for those segments of the community to spend even more time on this when we have yet to even see any explanation as to why original amendments were rejected. And I'm really having a hard time getting my mind around that.
Which original amendments are you talking about?
I'm talking about, for example, some of the original amendments that the IPC put in, and some of the suggestions that others within, you know, particularly among the users community. I think you're really dealing with an incentive issue here. Why should people spend more time on this when, at this point, we have no reason to believe, based on past experience, that anything we do or say will frankly matter?
So I'd like to have a broader, you know, a more detailed discussion about that, because the red line that the IPC did, we see that as you know, many of those amendments, maybe in a different form, but many of those amendments, you know, made it into this version. And your viewpoint may be the wording of them is such is that they're not effective as compared to what the IPC is the IPC presented. But certainly we had a checklist of, you know, we went through the IPC red line, said, okay, this is this issue, listed all the issues, and then went over to these amendments and picked them off and thought we had addressed very many of them. So I want to get a better understanding of.
Sure, and I think one way to do that, and one perhaps exercise that I think would be helpful to everyone, is if a decision is made to move forward with the amendments in place, to include in whatever report staff intends to prepare a very specific kind of suggestion by suggestion discussion as to why particular suggestions were not adopted. And to the extent that you can group them into categories, absolutely. And what I'm thinking of is something along the lines of, you know, what you see in the Federal Register when an agency publishes a final rule, and at that point they have to identify the reasons for not adopting recommendations or suggestions put in during the public comment period. And I think that, frankly, from a credibility and legitimacy perspective in the view of my constituency, absolutely has to happen.
So it sounds like, Kurt, it would be very helpful if there was a more detailed communication in terms of the changes that were made in response to public comment, changes that were not made, and any rationale, issues, et cetera, in that regard. But let's not try and do that here.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I agree.
Yeah.
I just want to not publish a document where we think we've addressed a concern, and you know, and then Christine or other members of our constituency or anyone think
sure.
we
no,
haven't.
Sure.
So I don't want to.
And we can you know have a dialogue offline.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. This is Tim with Lake back in the queue.
Okay, and let's go on to Alan.
Okay, in general, ALAC strongly supports doing something rather than going back square one and saying let's do it perfect and spend another 2 to 4 years on it. I'm a little bit worried though about what the process is that's actually being suggested. It sounds like you want this to go into.
Are you still there, Alan?
Yeah. Can you not hear me?
Oh, now I can. Yeah.
Okay.
You just stop.
Not intentionally.
Okay.
It sounds like you're looking to bring this to the GNSO for some sort of semi-PDP, but what comes out of it is a consensus policy, which we then recommend to the board. And I wonder, is something which doesn't go through the full-blown PDP process, starting with an issues report, going to have legitimacy, or is it going to be something which the registrars can then say, this wasn't the proper process followed, so it doesn't have any merit at all?
So I think that's a good question, and if there's not strong objection, we can get an answer to that separate from this. But I think it's a good question. Is that all right, Alan?
That's fine.
Yeah.
I don't want GNSO to waste more time on this and then find it was really not to any real purpose.
Right. Tim?
You know, the way I understand this, I mean, first of all, you know, the RAA that currently exists was drafted and adopted before the current PDP processes existed. So, you know, there's a very specific description of what constitutes a consensus policy under the RAA, and that's in 4.3.1 of the agreement. So, you know, there isn't any requirement that the existing PDP be followed in order to amend the agreement, but that the conditions of 4.3.1, you know, should be actually followed. So I think that I just want to point that out. As the counselors are looking at this whole situation, you know, they do it with some awareness of what the agreement actually says and requires. And the report, the information, for example, that Christine is asking for, I think is actually somewhat called for in that particular section of the agreement. So, you know, the before staff kind of duplicates efforts, I would think that it would be done in line with what's required in that particular section of the agreement.
And that's the section, I think, Kurt, that I ask you to send reference to the council list and any other related sections to that regarding council involvement in this. Okay. All right, Tim?
Right.
Okay, well, I think this was time very well spent, but we're way off on our agenda. I do want to welcome Terry Davis to the call as an observer. Terry was nominated by the NOMCOM to take the seat that John now holds and will be vacating at the end of the annual meeting in Cairo. So welcome, Terry.
Thank you.
All right, now back to the agenda, and I'll try and move this forward because there's several things we really need to get done today. The next item is GNSO response concerning geo-regions. Now keep in mind that this is just a set of GNSO comments, input in response to a request for feedback from various groups within ICANN regarding the geo-regions issue, and the main request was to find out whether there's support for a community-wide working group on this area, so the answer to that from the GNSO, at least in the draft response, is yes. But then we go on to suggest some other issues that are important for consideration in that. And Olga, you chair the drafting team on that. Do you want to share any comments in that regard?
Yes. Thank you. We, as you already mentioned, we prepared some recommendations for being considered in the formation of this working group, wide working group, and we divided some kind of principles in between two types: principles on the relevance of regions and principles on the change of regions. I don't know if you want me to go through the document or just taking consideration of the timing of the call. Steve, we have some comments from the council. I haven't, at least myself, I've been traveling a lot these days, but I haven't seen any feedback from our document that was sent 3 weeks ago. I don't know. How do you want to proceed?
Well, let's not go through the document in detail just because of time, and also it's been out there long enough for people to review, and hopefully everyone has. So we
But I'm Mehbani. Hold KG.
Operator, again.
Please, hold.
Okay, don't know where those interruptions come from, but they are starting to become a recurring occurrence on the on calls. Now, we don't have to act on this today. I did draft a motion just in case we're ready. It would be good at least to get a sense of where people are. Although there was a little bit of discussion on the planning committee list, and I think on the council list too, regarding the one recommendation that any application of geographic diversity requirements as applied to representatives in organizations should be based on citizenship, and then based on board action that's regarding the NOMCOM representatives and the whole idea of domicile. Some discussion occurred regarding that maybe we should say citizenship and or domicile or something like that. Does anybody want to talk about that right now?
Yes, I would like to say something.
Okay, Olga, anybody else? Okay, go ahead. Who was that?
Jimmy. Go ahead.
Okay. Olga?
Yes, there is a proposal for changing the NOMCOM rules for selecting board members. And it seems that there are some difficulties in finding people. When someone is living for a long period in another place, it's like being perhaps considered not as by his citizenship or her citizenship, but by the domicile where this person has lived for a while. In our document, we just mentioned the citizenship concept, and we haven't gone
to a domicile. We had some discussion in the list during this week, and in my opinion, we should leave it like that as it is now in relation with citizenship. I have some concerns about domicile. I think the domicile should be considered in a case-by-case basis because it's very different in case-by-case. It's not the same if you live in a welfare, in a country working for a foreign company or if you live there with your family. I think that citizenship, it's something more also permanent with someone that unless you are away from your country many, many years and you have lost your roots, it goes with you along your life. So this is only my concern, but I think that our document is focused only and mentions only citizenship, and I would suggest to leave it like that now.
Now, who else? I still did not hear who else. Sorry.
Zahid Jamil.
Okay.
I just a question there. A scenario where someone is actually a citizen, say, of a country like, you know, India or Pakistan or something else, but he holds a dual nationality and citizenship also of the state. So the first question is, does dual nationality either impact how this decision is going to be made? Does it exclude if you are having a new dual nationality, those to be selected? The second is, would citizenship in itself be enough? Because you could be a citizen but not at all have much linkage with that particular region, since you've been, you know, all your life and living in and sort of working in a completely separate region. So there may be possibilities where people are coming from a region saying we're belonging to this geographic region, but in fact it's only citizenship. Any discussion that's taken place on that yet?
Thanks, Saeed.
It's Alan. Could you put me in the queue?
Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
Okay, I was just going to comment on dual citizenship, which was just brought up. You have to remember that some of the rules that ICANN uses are not, you must be from a place, but you must not be from a place. In other words, the board cannot have more than 5 people from a specific region. And in dual citizenship, both of them count against you under the current rules.
And the intent of the change is you get to pick one. You know, I can imagine someone who's a citizen of 3 countries that's ruled out from doing almost anything under those kind of rules.
Right. It's a
complex issue. Because a
question on that, Alan.
Is
it true in all situations that multiple citizenship counts against you in all cases? I know in the case of the NOMCOM it did, but in the case of the GNSO Council, I'm not sure that that's true, but I'm not the expert either.
No, they work in different directions. In the NOMCOM, the only place it matters against you, I think, is in the board restriction of not having too many people from one region.
Right.
In the case of the GNSO, I think all of your citizenships count for you.
Right.
Gives you more flexibility.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to clarify.
Yeah.
Very good. Okay. Thank you. Saeed, did you have something else to say there?
No, that's fine. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. Anyone else? Now, We really should make a decision on this in the next meeting, if at all possible. So please come prepared to do that. I'm not going to proceed with the motion now unless somebody really wants to, because I think probably the issue of domicile needs a little more discussion and consideration. So please discuss those kind of things, and including the point that Zahid made with regard to citizenship. And be prepared to hopefully reach a conclusion on this and act on a motion in our meeting on the 16th of October. Now, that's fine for the timeline in this. We're kind of ahead of the curve in that regard. So, let me get back to my agenda here.
Tim, I'm sorry I left myself on mute.
Okay.
Can I just make a quick comment about that?
Go ahead.
If the councilors haven't read the actual proposed bylaw change, that you do so, because it's not as simple as it sounds. I mean, we in our discussion on the list, you know, we just kind of said citizenship or domicile, and it's much more detailed than that in the actual bylaw proposed change to the bylaws. So I just suggest that you all make sure you look at that too.
Okay, thank you. All right. Moving on then to a very important item on this agenda, and that's the
GNSO restructuring plan, the planning committee finished a draft plan yesterday, and Liz distributed that to the council list, and we're not expecting everybody to necessarily have had time to review that, although lots of it is very similar to what it was months ago when we looked at this, but there have been some significant changes and updating of the document. Now, the plan today is not to take action on this, but the intent is that action would be taken in our meeting on October 16th. So it's very important that all of us, if you haven't already done so, distribute the draft plan to your constituencies, discuss it between now and the 16th, and be prepared in our meeting on the 16th to vote on a motion to approve the plan or some amended version of the plan. So please, everyone, do that today if you haven't already done that. And what I'd like to do right now is just allow Rob to give a brief overview of the plan, not a detailed overview, and then allow some just a few questions and a little bit of discussion, understanding that we're going to have more detailed discussion on the list and in our next meeting, and then take action then. Bob?
Thank you, Chuck, and I take your admonition of brevity seriously, so I'll do my best here. As Chuck mentioned, the document is similar to prior versions that you've seen, but what I'd like to touch on is three significant ways it's different, and a couple significant ways in which it is still the same. I think it's important that you all have that perspective. First of all, it's similar in that it's still a top-level plan. It's designed to create an overall structure without prejudging any of the substantive issues. So it's an overall approach that the planning team is recommending to the council. Secondly, it preserves the previous three-tier structures you saw in the previous version of the plan back in the spring. And that three-tier structure is this. There's a top sort of management tier, which consists of you, the council, and the board liaison. And that's where decisions will be made about committee charters and the composition of the various steering committees. The middle tier is more of a strategic tier, which consists of two committees. One focused on process issues, like the working group model and changes to the policy development process. And the other focuses on operational issues. The council will operate, what sort of processes will be in place for constituencies, what sort of communications tools we'll all use, those types of issues. And then finally, the real working sort of tactical tier would consist of work teams established by the two committees that'll do the heavy lifting on targeted areas such as the working group model and the PDP, and other very specific targeted areas. And that's where most of the debate, discussions, and recommendations will be originated. Finally, it's important to note that this isn't a final document, that, as Chuck mentioned, there is an opportunity for everybody to provide input, particularly from this constituency group. And so I think the planning team is looking forward to any comments that are made in this venue. The document is also different in two significant ways that you all need to be aware of. It was a very important issue as far as the planning committee was concerned with respect to the strategic tier. You may recall from the original version of the plan that the team suggested two standing committees. In the present version of the plan, they're now referred to as steering committees to reflect the temporary existence that they will take. They're not intended to be permanent bodies, and in fact, the plan, as you'll read, includes a sunset date corresponding with the 2009 annual meeting. So that built into the plan is that the committees will expire unless the council specifically decides to renew them. And then finally, the overall planning team, I think, the document also specifically notes that the plan will focus on the overall GNSO improvements. And a significant change since the last time the draft was put together is that we've had the discussions about the GNSO Council restructuring. And the team in this version specifically noted this overall plan will cover all of the improvements except for the seating of councilors and the new bicameral voting structure. And presumably the team or you all as a whole will discuss how we really work through the implementation and planning for the council restructuring as somewhat of a separate or parallel track in terms of implementing all the GNSO improvements. And so I think overall, as you look at it, you'll see compared to the spring, it's a much tighter, more detailed plan, reflecting, I think, the knowledge and experience that the planning team developed over the last 4 or 5 months. There's obviously been a lot of changes that have taken place as well. And I think that we'll all benefit from input from the constituency. I also invite any members of the team who are on the call to fill in on gaps or stuff that I've missed that you guys think is important. Thanks, Chuck.
You're welcome. And let me point out that every constituency was represented on the planning team, and the NOMCOM reps as well, and the ALAC. So we had the involvement there, good broad involvement in this, and hopefully your reps, in the case of constituencies, have kept you informed in terms of what's going on and involved you in the process. Now, let me first of all open it up to anybody on the planning committee that would like to add anything. Anyone? Okay, then I'll open up a general queue. Of anybody have any quick questions or comments? Okay. Again, please expedite discussion of this with your groups, and be prepared on the meeting on the 16th to vote on a motion approving the plan or any amendments that may have been made to the plan before then or in that meeting. So, any questions? Anyone have anything there?
It's Alan. I just have one. You said ALAC was involved.
I'm sorry. You were not involved? No, you personally weren't, but...
I don't think anyone was, but... someone was, I'd like to know who.
Okay, may have been my mistake. Sorry about that. Okay.
Okay.
Let's...
Hi, this is Zahid again.
Zahid, go ahead.
Some question. Yeah, hi. I haven't had a full chance to read the entire document, but there was some question about what the board had proposed just to be members of the steering committee, and then there was some discussion, I think, in the document about what... It's open to discussion as to how many members should be on a specific steering committee. I mean, how many, 3, 4, or 5. Can somebody sort of give me a little more information on
sure.
that?
Sure. When you do get a chance to read it, you'll see that the plan recommends that the steering committees try to stay 12 or less, and that includes one representative per constituency. Does not have to be a counselor. It includes a NOMCOM rep, the opportunity for the ALAC and the GAC to have a representative on there, the steering committees are intended to be kept small because their role is a coordinating role. Like Rob pointed out, the real work of developing detailed implementation plan is expected to happen at the working team level, and in fact, as guidance to the steering committee, but not something they necessarily have to follow exactly. You know, several working teams were suggested. Two in the case of the policy steering committee, and three specifically in the case of the operations steering committee. Now, the goal is to have kickoff steering committee meetings in Cairo, which means to accomplish that, the plan would be to approve the plan on the 16th of October, and even between now and then, try to decide in constituencies who you'd like to have as your rep on each of the steering committees, hopefully a different person on each steering committee, and then actually be prepared to finalize that before Cairo, the steering committee membership, and hold steering committee meetings in Cairo. And if we do that on the weekend, and that's not decided yet, but if we did, keep in mind our practice is usually to have any working group or meetings like that on the weekend as much as possible be open to anyone who's there, including the full council, so you get a chance to participate in that way. Does that help, Zahid?
That does actually help. I just had one follow-up question. I see I'm trying to compare the membership of the Process Steering Committee and the Operations Committee, and I see that in the Process Steering Committee, it says you can have one person from each constituency, in brackets, need not be a council member. It doesn't say that in the Operations Committee, that it need not be someone from who's not on the council. Is there a difference between there? I think
that was an oversight if that was missed.
Okay. Right.
The intent was that both would be open. It does not have to be a counselor.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for catching that. Rob, let's make sure we capture that. Anyone else? And again, as the person who chaired that group, I want to really compliment all of the participants of the group because it was a very effective group and everybody was extremely constructive. And there were issues that were a little more challenging for us, but I thought that everyone worked together very cooperatively, and I compliment the team for doing that. And I think we've got a plan that is workable going forward. Now, I don't think Philip's joined us yet, but Philip pointed out that this requires each of us in constituencies to get involvement of quite a few different people to make this thing work. Even if there's just five working teams as outlined, you really need hopefully five different people at least, and you're not on the working teams, you're not going to be restricted to one, to get broad representation, you need to get a lot of different people and possibly some new people involved in this, and so hopefully each of us in constituencies will be able to accomplish that. And it will be challenging. There's a lot of work to be done to make these things happen, and as we all know, the board is anxious for this to happen in a timely fashion. Anyone else? Okay, and then one last comment on the seating of councilors. As Rob pointed out, that's being on the council under the bicameral model. That will be handled separately, and that's primarily, and the committee itself, planning committee, recommended that that's really an issue primarily between the stakeholder groups, the four stakeholder groups, and the board, and may not necessarily need council involvement in that regard. So I believe that the policy staff and Denise is heading that up, and is with her team working on procedures for making that happen, and I think more information will be forthcoming on that. Anything else on that? Okay. Then let's go on to the to item number 7, which is the ICANN subsidization of GNSO travel expenses. And really what we're the only reason this is on here is to hopefully decide on an approach for developing a longer term plan for applying the ICANN procedure for this that was put out that's, I think, applicable at least for this fiscal year, for ICANN fiscal year. And so one approach obviously we could do is to form a little drafting team that would begin to pull some things together. And as everyone, I think, knows, we applied the procedure specifically for Cairo in the short term, but didn't try to develop a long-term approach to doing that, and that's what we need to start working on soon, so that we're prepared well in advance of the meeting in Mexico City and anything else that might occur in between now and then. So, thoughts on that? Is forming a drafting team a reasonable approach and getting volunteers for that? Any comments?
I volunteer for that. This is Olga.
Go ahead, Olga.
No, I'm just volunteering for drafting.
Okay, thank you.
Same here for Zahid, also volunteering for drafting.
Okay, thank you, Zahid. Anybody else want to volunteer? I'm all for going straight to the volunteers. And by the way, we don't have to have them all right now, but what I'd like each of you in your constituencies, again, if you can do it today, that would be great, to find out, you know, send a message out to your constituencies to identify other volunteers and communicate those to the list, to the council list, so that we can form that committee. And I think it might work that that committee just select its own chair and go ahead and come up with a draft proposal for moving forward that the council then would consider. So if everyone would do that, then so that'll be an action item for all of us to go out and see if anybody wants to participate in that group. Okay. Now, anything else on the travel expense issue that anyone would like to talk about? Okay. Let's go on then to item 8, planning for Cairo. And there is going to be on the afternoon of Monday the 3rd a trans-silo joint meeting. We got a new term. We have a new term there for us, and that is going to involve both the CCNSO and the GNSO, as well as the GAC and the ALAC. And there will be some specific things that are of interest that will be talked about jointly in that meeting. On Thursday, although this isn't totally finalized yet, it's anticipated that we will do like a lunch meeting like we did in the last meeting, maybe, I think the last couple meetings, a joint meeting between the GNSO and CCNSO only. And that would be, and I say those only, but obviously our liaisons from the advisory groups are invited to that as well, and they're usually open meetings for people to observe too. So we could talk about issues that are common to the to both the CCNSO and the GNSO, like the implementation of IDN TLDs on both sides, fast track, etc. Possibly the ICANN transition and the President's Steering Committee work that's ongoing right now, and any idea of a cross SOPDP, which is something that's never dealt with, and something that probably we should be talking about a little bit more. Now, I think everyone's aware that we are planning working sessions of the GNSO on both Saturday and Sunday, although the details and timing of most events is still being worked. So those who can be there for those, again, those will not be voting GNSO council meetings. That will happen on our regular open council meeting, which I assume will happen on Wednesday morning. But there will be some working sessions on Saturday. The plan going forward on Saturday includes at least two agenda items, one of them being the new detailed new GTLD implementation discussion that we talked about when Kirk was giving us the update, and then the second one would be the GNSO improvements implementation work, and that possibly would be a good day for the steering committees to have their inaugural meetings. On Sunday, there's a possibility of working group meetings for the transfer policy working group, as well as the fast flux. We'll get some feedback from both of those groups in that regard in the near term. But there's also a joint meeting with the GAC, and like we said earlier, that might be a good time for us to discuss with GAC the issues regarding the the geographic place names, country names, et cetera, at the, and hopefully by then we will have seen the proposal from staff in that regard that, if I understand it correctly, will differ from what the Reserve Name Working Group recommended, at least some, and so that may be a good time to interact with the GAC in that regard. And then on Sunday night, we have our board ICANN staff council dinner meeting. Any questions on or comments, or did I, and anybody that point something out that I've left out, please do so on this. Okay. Let's go to the Who Is Hypothesis Study Group. We're at a stage here where, again, the plan is to, in the meeting on October 16th, at least start detailed discussions in terms of what hypotheses, if any, we may want to ask staff to develop cost estimates for and other steps in that regard. The goal today is not to do any of that, but rather just to see, make sure, first of all, that everyone is working that issue with your constituencies so that on the 16th we can have a meaningful and productive, at least initial discussion in that regard. I don't think that either Aubrey and I think it's going to be culminated on the meeting on the 16th, but it'd be good if we got a good start and got a feel for where people are at and how we can move forward on that. So please be working that issue. Now, that said, let me see if anyone has any questions or comments in that regard.
Chuck, it's Liz. I just want to mention that, and I think most of you know this, but the AILAC is developing a statement, which is not final, but it is public. And, you know, I expect we would certainly have the benefit of it before the 16th.
Okay, good.
Alan may have a further update.
And we have, by the way, communicated, I say we, staff, I think, did most of this, was communicated with the advisory committees, asking them to provide input, if at all possible, by the 16th so that we could, and that doesn't mean we can't get input after that, but so that they can be a part of the process in terms of making our decisions. And as everybody knows, the GAC, of course, has real strong opinions in this particular regard.
But we have not heard back from the GAC to date. And unless you have, Chuck.
No, I have not.
Yeah.
And I don't think Aubrey has either. She's pretty good about forwarding things on if she hears back. So.
Right.
Anything else on the Who Is Hypothesis Study Group? All right. Then item 10, the motion on a request for issues report on registration abuse policies. And let me, that motion was made by Mike Rodenbaugh and seconded by Greg Ruth. Mike, let me give you the opportunity to do a brief introduction of this.
Okay, sure. It's basically intended to find out what the discrepancies are in the various registry contracts and what discussions have been had in the past on this issue, and ask the staff to provide potential options for the council to consider further work on the topic. And I've seen Tim's proposed amendment, or I guess not really a proposed amendment as much as a new motion, but I can agree partially with it. And let me see, Tim, if this will work for you. Rather than amending it as you've done, how about adding the part about getting a general counsel review simply as bullet point number 5 in the issue report, so that that comes back as well with the rest of the staff report. That way it'll all be bundled together, and the underlying work doesn't need to be totally set aside while we wait for the counsel.
Yeah, let me explain a little bit more to Mike. Actually, I think that would be a normal part of an issues report. I think that's the way that's defined, that the council's opinion of scope would be included in it. But what my concern was really was that what's being asked for here is quite a bit of work on part of the staff. It's going to require a lot of time and resources on their part. And from my perspective, you know, voting on something that's going to require that kind of time and effort, I would like to know, and maybe this is part of some failing in the whole process, is that we don't know if something's in scope until the issues report comes back, typically. And it seems to me that's a little bit backwards in that getting some opinion, at least an initial preliminary opinion as to scope, would help in making decisions about whether to be in agreement with an issues report or not. And it's certainly not that we can't ask for an issues report if something doesn't necessarily appear to be in scope. We could even initiate a PDP on something out of scope. But it's a piece of information that I feel is lacking, you know, up front, especially when we're talking about the kind of effort that's going to be involved in pulling together the report being asked for here. So that was my purpose, was to get some kind of preliminary idea about scope, and then that gives an opportunity to maybe amend the request for the issues report, but at least let the councilors would be fully informed about what it is they're voting on.
Well, okay, I'm going to respond to that just briefly. I mean, I think it is putting the cart before the horse a bit. You're asking council then to give an opinion about what exactly. I think also there's little doubt that registration of use policies generally fall within GNSO's policy-making purview. If they don't, what else does? So I really just feel like your motion would really just delay things, and that my motion, which could incorporate the specific aspect of yours, is not actually all that much work for staff. I mean, I'm certainly glad and eager to hear staff's view of that perception, but it wasn't intended to be a whole lot of work, but really just some pulling together some background.
And maybe some of it's some confusion about what. Excuse me, when I read all of this, and the references in it, it seems to be implying use as a part of registration abuse, and then but you say DNS abuse, and I see that as something different. And you know, ICANN staff in the past has said very clearly, you know, that they don't get into issues of how a domain name is used, or that certain aspects of things like spam or even phishing are more public policy issues than they are ICANN policy issues. Then you get into things like fast flux, which might be more related to DNS abuse, which might be more within scope. So, but this seems to kind of cover the whole registration abuse issue from my perspective more than, which isn't necessarily DNS abuse. At least, from a technical definition.
Now, I will give staff, and I'm going to strongly encourage staff to comment in terms of the level of effort here in a moment. But what I wanted to do is see who would like to be in the queue to talk about this.
Yeah, and definitely me. It's Liz. Thanks, Chuck.
Okay. Other people?
Saheed,
okay. Anyone else? Okay. Liz, can you talk a little bit about the level of effort or anything else you'd like to talk about in this particular request? Because you or one of your colleagues are going to be responsible for taking the lead in developing and writing an issues report.
Yeah, I actually have three thoughts, and Kurt and his team may have an additional perspective in terms of the volume of work. I do think the volume of work isn't insignificant. I'm also not entirely sure that all the information that's being sought is available, that it would be useful in fully. I think it would be useful, but sufficient in terms of yielding the result in terms of being able to answer or begin to try to talk about number four in particular, the area that's in number four of the draft motion. I think that could be problematic. So, you know, the volume work I'm concerned about. I'm concerned about the availability of the information. Certainly the actual contract provisions are available, but in terms of previous discussion in ICANN fora, there may just, I don't know how much there is there. I wanted to make two other quick points, one about the scope issue and another comment about number four, and I guess they're interrelated. I think one challenge in trying to provide feedback on the scope issue as an initial step in the process is that if you look at all four of the tasks, the first three tasks, I suspect, without discussing it further with staff, I suspect are going to be viewed as more within scope. They're factual about what specifically is in exists today. Number four, I think it's harder to make a judgment about scope in some respects because without knowing what the specific potential options might be, there's a real sort of blue sky aspect there. And I don't know if that's a cart before the horse question. And then the third point, which is related to that, is, and it's something Mike and I have discussed a little bit, and I think he's provided some guidance on, but I think we'd still struggle with it a little bit, is exactly what's meant by consistency and propriety in the language and a judgment call that staff would have to make there. It also strikes me as worth discussion among the council about whether that particular element, number four, might be more of a working group task following an issues report, identifying the options for consideration rather than something that staff should do as part of an issues report, but I throw that out to the group for discussion. So, in summary, I'm concerned about the volume of work, but I'm also concerned about the challenge of trying to address the scope question as a threshold matter, and I'm also concerned about whether number four, I think we'd certainly want some clarity from staff around, more clarity and direction around what's meant by propriety in particular, and or the more we could get in guidance, the better, and whether that should be a second, part two.
Now, Liz, a question for you. You mentioned Kurt, and do you anticipate that doing this issues report would involve more than just the policy team and the general counsel's office?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Kurt, did you want to respond at all? Have you looked at this? I don't know if you've focused on this, or even if you're still online. I haven't looked at my meeting view in a while.
Liz, can you explain why you think anybody beyond policy staff needs to be involved in this?
Because they're really the experts on the agreements. In other words, identifying and describing the provisions.
Well, I mean, it's just not that hard to look at the agreements and figure out which provisions are relevant here, in my view. But how about this? I mean, I understand your issue about number four, and I think, frankly, that is not really something that staff needs to do anyway. That's something that counselors can do once you come back with the underlying factual information. So
I wasn't pushing back, just to be clear, Mike. I wasn't pushing back at all in terms of, and Chuck asked whether he thought it would be work and whether it would involve services, and I do think it would be work, and I do think it would involve services. So it was just really intended to, answer that. I think that's, certainly staff would take this on. We would do it, in a sense, we would pull it together, involving the services staff and, every part of the team that we would need to generate a thorough product, and we would do it, with alacrity based on, I'd like to discuss the time frame within which we do it, because normally an issues report would get done in 15 calendar days, and we've got Cairo, and so I'd like to have a discussion about timing, too, but I thought I'd leave that to sort of phase two of the discussion. But no problem at all about, staff will do this if the council, deems it appropriate.
Okay. I propose it's a little bit simpler and hopefully get complete consensus on this. I've just tried to send this to the list. I'll try to send it again from my account to subscribe to the list. So it'll come shortly, momentarily. but basically, how about just in deleting my number 4 and making Tim's point number 4? So number 4 would read, to request an opinion of ICANN staff counsel as to which aspects of registration abuse policies as discussed above may be within the scope of GNSO policy development.
Say that again, please, Mike.
Sure. So number 4 would read, essentially, it's just adopting Tim's language as my point number 4 and deleting my point number 4. So number 4 would read, to request an opinion of ICANN staff counsel, of ICANN staff, as to which aspects of registration of use policies as discussed above may be within the scope of GNSO policy development.
First of all, Tim, are you comfortable with that?
Well, you know, I have to give it some thought, but here's, you know, when I'm talking about scope, here's the kind of thing that I mean. For example, you know, affiliates just amended their agreement, sent it to ICANN, it went through the registry service process and all that. You know, and so, you know, there was no indication whatsoever that this was a consensus policy issue or that there was any intention that it would ever be. There's already clauses of that nature in many of the registrar agreements, as pointed out here, that have nothing to do with consensus clauses. So, you know, I mean, if these things exist, they can be modified at will by registries by simply getting ICANN's approval. What's our end goal, or what's our end ability to do anything about what we find out? And that's where I have concerns about asking for a lot of work on the part of staff to get to something that we can't really do anything about anyway. So if we can, I just would like to know that up front. Would like to know. And if it's not a topic, or there's no intention or no ability for that to become, you know, a part of policy development, then I'm not sure what the purpose of an issues report would be.
It's Alan. Could you put me in the queue?
Yeah. Okay. And I want to go to Zahid. Thank you for being patient, Zahid.
Not at all. Thank you. Just 2 points. Just one. I think we can't really answer the question that Tim just raised, whether we want to go for a policy development process or not, unless we actually have the facts and the information on 1, 2, and 3. So I would say that it may be an interesting idea to look into this area, get staff to actually, it's sort of like a comparison and a gap analysis of the contract, 1, 2, and 3 at the very least. I would have imagined that could be done fairly, well, not too quickly, but at least with minimal resources, I hope. And then that would give the counselors, once they have that in front of them, the idea of whether they want to go for a policy development process or not. But without the information, enough facts in front of them to decide whether this is something that the council should work towards policy development process, may not be, again, maybe card before the horse. One question, and that's 1 point. Secondly, with regard to scope, I think I understand the concerns with number 4, and I think that the proposal made by Mike seems fairly reasonable, considering I think that since you've suggested that in your amended draft that you sent on the email, I think that probably seems pretty interesting. I mean, to go in and I hope that we can get consensus from everybody on the call right now on that. But as far as scope for 1, 2, and 3 is concerned, I think it's maybe not 1, 2, 3 seem pretty clear that the scope is just to identify and describe and do a comparison of that, and I think that much is clear. So just wanted to make those 2 points. Thank you.
Thank you, Zahid. And before I give it to Alan, understand, too, that one of the big efforts in the GNSO improvements implementation is going to be a revision of the PDP and this whole area of issues reports and whether you dealing with the question of scope and things like that. I suspect that the working team that spends time on that will spend quite a bit of time in revising this, including the time frames, which are quite often way too short. And I suspect, Liz, that you would like more than 15 days to do this based on what I heard you say, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Alan?
Yeah, I'm just a bit confused about what Tim was saying. The fact that a registry asks for a contract change is not at odds with the fact that something is within scope for a consensus policy. the AGP consensus policy hits exactly the same areas as the Newstar and affiliates requests on limiting the use of the ad grace period. And that doesn't take it out of the range. It just means they've decided to go ahead unilaterally on their own without all the other, you know, without ICANN's demand to do it. So I don't see any conflict at all about something being out of scope because it's a contractual term.
Yeah, and that I don't disagree on. But it's just something that I think would be good to know. You know, in other words, are we? If we knew up front, you know, it should be fairly clear what is within scope of GNSO consensus policy or what isn't.
It would be nice.
It shouldn't take, like, you know, a 6-month evaluation by staff to figure out, you know, what's within scope. That doesn't mean we can't proceed, but knowing up front, you know, are we asking for an issues report on something that's not typically in scope of GNSO policy, I think is a good question. Instead, right now what happens is we ask for an issues report, then we find out whether or not what's in or out of scope of GNSO policy before we move forward. What I'm suggesting is we should be finding out, and it shouldn't be that difficult, what's in scope before we ask for the issue report so that we know what we're really asking for. And that would give the counselors better information about what it is that they're agreeing to or not.
So it sounds, Tim, like you're suggesting that before we even request the issues report, we get some indication of scope rather than an amendment to this motion. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right. And that's, so, you know, and I think Mike made a good point. Probably the way I had amended the motion was actually making it a new motion, requesting an opinion of scope from the staff council, before we then ask for the issues report. Just because the council says, well, you know, abuse of registration policies or whatever are not typically within GNSO policy scope, doesn't mean we can't ask for the issue report. It doesn't even mean that we can't proceed with the policy process. There's a different threshold or whatever. But knowing that up front seems to make more sense to me than waiting until after we've requested all the work. Because I know for myself, at least, it would have an impact on how I might vote on a particular request for an issue report.
Can I respond to that briefly, please?
Philip, you're on the queue as well, please.
I'm sorry. Was that Zahid first?
Philip.
Mike.
Oh, Philip. Okay, Philip. Well, there we go. Thank you.
Thanks. I'm a bit surprised by the discussion that I've just tuned into. I apologize for being late to this call. The intent of an issues report is to find out whether or not there was an issue that is worth council addressing. It's nothing more than that. So now having, you know, pre-issue reports and pre-issue reports and discussions about scope before all that is just crazy. We need to have a grip on reality sometimes, and I think it's just a bizarre suggestion that we try to do anything like that. We shouldn't overcomplicate what the issues report is supposed to be about. It is not the final report. It is not the final work. It is merely saying, here's an issue that a set of councillors think might be worth addressing. Let's have a bit of fact in front of us, see if we can do so. In terms of what we do with that, I mean, certainly useful to ask in that the question that we've asked before, is this going to be in scope in terms of taking action that may be a consensus policy? That's very, very relevant. But there are a whole set of other outcomes that could take place. De minimis would be a set of best practice recommendations that could be taken up voluntarily by registries who want to show themselves to be good registries and attract customers. You know, there's a whole number of outcomes that can come from this, but let's see some basic work first so we can take an informed decision.
And I'd like to respond to that. I don't really, you know, appreciate being called crazy, but the point is, it's not crazy. I mean, the issues report, a part of it is that opinion from council about scope. All I'm saying is that if that can be determined when an issues report is requested, then why can it not be determined separately up front so that, you know, appropriate decisions can be made about what we ask for it for that issue report or what purpose we might ask for it. It could have an impact on exactly, you know, how we structure the request or what information we might ask for, knowing up front, you know, what the situation is with scope. That's all I'm saying. It's not crazy. It doesn't involve any more work than what's typically asked for. It's just, in my mind, putting relevant information up front so that more informed decisions can be made when we make these kinds of requests.
Okay, Tim. You know, I appreciate that. That's why I've pretty much agreed to the substance of your request here in order to hopefully get your consensus on this motion. And just fundamentally, in order for council to evaluate this issue, they're going to have to go through steps 1 through 3, regardless. So, bottom line, I feel like we're on the same page, essentially, so I'm hoping that you will agree to this.
Yeah. It's Alan. Can I get a word?
Go ahead, Alan.
Okay. I agree with him in concept, but since we are going to be embarking upon a revision of the PDP process soon, it seems rather premature and not a waste of time, but a stumbling block right now to try to have that debate in respect to this particular motion. So I think it's a valid discussion that we need to have, but it needs to fit very well into the process coming up and not necessarily in this particular one.
Right. Now, I have a procedural question. The amendment to number 4, talking about scope, is that really needed, or is that automatically included in an issues report? And maybe that's a question for staff to respond to.
Really, regardless, Chuck, if it's redundant, who cares? If we can all agree on it, then let's vote and move forward.
Okay, so, yeah, then the redundancy is okay. So if that helps, I hear what you're saying.
This is Tim. I don't want to belabor this, and I didn't. My intent really wasn't to get contentious or you know, drag this thing out into some other kind of discussion. So, I apologize if that's what's happened, but, you know, you're just trying to make a suggestion, make a point, and if something we can agree to at least consider later as we look at the new PDP, you know, then I'm fine with that.
Thank you, Tim. Now, a question for Liz. Would you appreciate an extension of the time for the issues report on this particular request? And if so, and the reason I'm asking that is maybe we could include in the motion that particular extension. If so, what would you request?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure that out.
I understand that we're leading up to a Cairo meeting, which complicates it even more because I know that's a very busy time, not only for ICANN staff, but for a lot of us, too.
Well, exactly,
but,
and that's what's really, you know, normally it would be 15 days, and so normally I would ask for 30, but because of Cairo, I mean, I really, you know, if the council would indulge the staff, I would ask for, like, the 17th of November.
Mike, would that be acceptable to you as the maker of the motion?
Frankly, no. This motion was made over a month ago. It didn't make it on the last agenda, although, you know, frankly, under our bylaws, it was required to have, I believe, or at least it was required to be held in this meeting. But I just don't understand why this work can't be done in 30 days, for example. It's not that much work. It doesn't seem to me, especially now that we've taken out number 4. I understand why Liz was having headaches about that one. But the first 3 bullets here are just not that complicated. And, you know, maybe the 4th is. Maybe if council's office wants to come back and say they need more time, then that's fine. But, you know, the bottom line is these timelines, you know, there's no penalty if staff doesn't meet them. So what's the point of even worrying about it that much?
So you'd certainly be willing to take as a friendly amendment extending the issues report deadline to 30 days?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so...
And if staff comes back and says they can't meet it, so be it. We don't...
Right. I mean, what can we do about it anyway?
We gave up our guillotine a while ago.
So,
what I would suggest, and I'm not going to try and draft amendments like Aubrey does. I'm not that good. But I think the motion then would read in the intro to the four items, including the amended one, the GNSO Council resolves to request an issues report within 30 days from ICANN staff with respect to the following. Would that be okay?
Yes.
Okay. And regarding item four, is the feeling that we include Tim's language in number four instead of what was in the original amendment?
Yes, and I circulated that to the council list.
Okay. Are there any questions or further discussion?
I just one more just point on the timing. You know, and I'm not really trying to be overburdensome to staff or anything. I just frankly, I feel like this is a topic that we should talk about in Cairo. So I'd like to see this report in advance. Otherwise, we're not going to have face-to-face and a large meeting to discuss this again until Mexico City, which is, I think, 5 months afterwards.
Thanks, Mike. Anyone else? Okay, Glenn, would you take a roll call on this? Please, a roll call vote. Is anybody, if everybody's clear on what we're voting on? Is anybody not clear? Okay, an issues report has a fairly low threshold to request one, so we will go ahead and proceed if nobody has anything further. Okay, Glenn?
I'll take a roll call vote, Chuck. Philip Shepherd?
This is a key public interest issue. I vote yes.
Mike Rodenbach?
Yes.
Zahid Jamil?
Yes.
Utadeke is not on the phone. Christina Rosette?
Yes.
Cyril Chua is not on the phone. Greg Ruth?
Yes.
Robin Gross?
Yes.
I believe Norbert has disconnected because of connectivity problems. Norbert, are you there? Adrian Kinderis? Tim Ruiz? Tim, are you there?
Sorry. Can't remember, I have mute on a lot. Yes.
And Adrian, are you there perhaps? Jordy? Jordy has disconnected, it would seem.
Yeah, it looks like he has, Glenn.
Chuck Gomes?
Yes.
Olga Cavelli?
Yes.
Olga, did Olga respond?
She
yes.
Said yes.
Oh,
11 votes in favor.
Okay, which is more than enough to
more
request
than enough.
Issues report. Thank you, everyone. And we now go to other business, and I'm sorry we're running a little bit over here. We should be able to wrap it up shortly. Alan, I think you had any other business. Does anyone else have any other business that they wanted to bring up in this call? Okay, Alan,
okay.
It's open to you.
This is just a heads up. The ALAC through the North American Railroad has had a request to look into initially the redemption grace period and try to start a process that would make it a consensus policy and require it on investigation that looks like a wider topic than that. And we are looking at requesting an issue report on the overall issue of ensuring that registrants who inadvertently or through some sort of act lose their registration during the period immediately after expiry have a way to get it back in a predictable and reasonably priced way. So essentially, it's enacting the redemption grace period as it used to be implemented. The situation has changed now because of various registrar practices, but we are going ahead on that. The intent is to approve the request for an issues report at our meeting on October 14th and finalize the report in the request in Cairo. And we are looking for people to support the process if there's any interest within constituencies, and
potentially collaborators to try to make sure the request for issues report is worded in such a way that we get an issues report out that's useful.
And just one suggestion there, Alan, so that anybody that would like, any constituency or group that would like to join the ALAC in this request, if you could, once you have a fairly detailed request, if you could send that to the GNSO Council.
I plan to be sending something out today at the level that we have today and keeping people alert.
That's great. That'll help a lot of us in terms of working with our constituency.
Yep.
So that's excellent. Any comments on that? Go ahead.
I just wanted to let Alan know that NCUC would be interested in working with him on that proposal.
Dandy.
Thank you. Okay. Okay. Anyone else? Any other business? Okay. Thank you for your patience. A couple just reminders at the end. First, and maybe a request. The update portion of our agenda today was really packed with information that the community is interested in. So it'd be really helpful if we could get either that portion of the minutes done quickly, and so that we can distribute it to our groups, or if staff could maybe prepare an update summary of what we covered. It was quite a lot, I know. But at the same time, it's information that I thought, all of our constituency members, et cetera, are very interested in, so it would be very helpful. Last of all, I want to remind everybody that in our next meeting, we've got some important action items. The geographical comments from the GNSO, the getting started on the who is studies decision making, and then very important to get the take action on the GNSO improvements implementation plan. Any questions on that? So everyone's cooperation in making sure that constituencies and advisory committees, et cetera, work on those things between now and then is much appreciated. Thank you very much for your cooperation. Have a good rest of the week. Meeting adjourned. Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeff.